catch me if you can. He says I'm the greatest.
Okay, so let's go to the line and meet up with Johnny Wakelin, and a very good day to you, Johnny.
Hi, Vince. How are you?
Fine, fine. And thank you very much indeed for the time you're giving us today. And,
okay.
You know, it's one of those songs that I played, obviously, when it was around in the 70s and then into the 80s. And, I just every now and again, I think, well, we didn't know enough about you. So, belatedly, we'll put that right.
Right. Okay.
So, first and foremost, born and bred in Brighton, East Sussex.
Yes.
And are you still living there?
I still live in Brighton, yep.
And, of course, when we look at your career, we know quickly the two big hits. But
yeah.
Looking at your profile, which I've seen on various other websites,
yeah.
You've really got quite a great range of vocal capability anyway, haven't you?
Yes. Well, I do. What those two hits weren't really entirely representative of what I do. You know, I mean, I enjoyed doing them, obviously, and they've been good to me, those songs. But I do lots of other stuff, you know. I do a lot of soul and ballads and reggae. I love reggae and African type stuff, you know. All sorts, really. You know, I can go right back to the 40s even and do the old standards if it's required.
Well, of course, you know, when we first heard that song and then in Zaire, I got the impression that there must be some either affinity or link with, and you've just said it, reggae music, or certainly the sort of music maybe we used to hear a lot of on Radio 1.
Yes. Well, you know, I do love reggae. It's not my only thing, but as I said before, but I'm a particular fan of Bob Marley. I used to love his stuff.
Mm.
And I've written a lot of reggae songs as well as others. You know, I mean, I've written probably about 1,000 songs in my time, and a fair amount of them are reggae.
Well, of course, from somebody that used to love the blue beat, which tended to be a little bit before on radio times, I know where you're coming from, and I certainly, over the years, you've listened to...
Yeah.
I don't play a lot of reggae where I am because of the type of audience we probably would appeal to or don't appeal to, whichever way you look at it. Let me go to something that you, I know, would interest a lot of our listeners, and this is your work with the James Last Orchestra.
Yes, well, I was on tour in Germany 4 or 5 times during the sort of 75, 76, 77, and I had a fair bit of success there, more than I did in England. In fact, in Europe, I had more success in general in Europe than I did in England, and James Last recorded 3 of my songs on one of his albums that he did sort of annually of current pop songs at that time, and if he would always try to get one of the artists whose songs he recorded to tour with him, and this time they actually asked me, which I was delighted to do, and I went on these tours with him. It was so easy to do because I just used to go on for, do a 20-minute spot, about 5 or 6 songs, and that was it, you know, and it was very easy going. No band problems, no travelling problems. I just got on the coach every day with them and went to wherever. And I enjoyed that very much.
Mm. And also, tell me about the gigs in Las Vegas. This, I think, was 2003.
Yeah, well, I went up there. I hadn't got anything arranged, but a friend of mine lives there, and a friend from Brighton, and he invited me and others out for about 3 weeks to just for the hell of it, you know, just what you go to Las Vegas for. And while I was there, this guy, when he was here, he used to arrange gigs for me. He should have been an agent, you know. He was so good at talking people into giving you gigs, and he did the same thing over there without me knowing. When I arrived, he said, "Look, I've fixed you up with these gigs." He said, "We've hired the gear, exactly the same gear that you use at home, and you got to do it. It's, you know, I've promised them that you'll be there."
Yeah, which were the venues that you played in Vegas?
Well, they weren't. But it wasn't in the big casinos. That was pretty much a closed shop. It wouldn't be if you were there permanently. I guess, but I just going out there on the off chance for 3 weeks was. That wasn't a possibility.
Yeah.
But there was several sort of outlying mini clubs, if you like, mini places that that had music, and it went down really well. Yeah, it was great.
And
the object was that eventually I might go out there and stay for a bit for a few months and see if I could get my foot in the door, and you know, do some other things. Unfortunately, I haven't got round to that yet because I've been involved in several other things since and haven't sort of got back there, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. When we think back to Top of the Pops and the sort of things that, you know, I should really have remembered you from Top of the Pops, but sometimes you remember a song. I obviously, like a lot of people, was weaned on the listening side rather than the you know, the video side, if you like. Yeah. And you know, it's strange. The song has stuck in my memory and in Zaire certainly, probably because of my DJing days in the clubs. Now I want to ask you about this gear, this guy Paul Hollingdale. And is it true, as it's written, that he introduced you to Muhammad Ali?
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, well, Paul is a broadcaster today, even. But you know, going back then, he was quite well known. Not as big as some of the jocks, but he was one of the original Radio 1 and Radio 2 disc jockeys. And prior to that, he'd been at Radio Luxembourg, and prior to that was on one of the two-way or three-way Family Favourites DJs.
Right.
Going back on, you know, on Sundays years ago. I don't know if you remember.
Just about.
Anyway, Paul was very knowledgeable of he knew lots of people in the business and in the boxing business, because a good friend of his, K.O. Dwyer, who was at that time was boss of Francis Day and Hunter, the music publishers that were under the roof of EMI, which was where I was signed. She was her special friend was Jack Solomons, the big time boxing promoter.
Yeah.
And they got very interested in my song, and they were able to introduce me to Ali. I met him three times on his trips over to do these chat things. He used to go around theatres just talking, you know, just an evening with Muhammad Ali kind of thing. And so I went to a couple of those and met him there, and also at a press conference, and it was all down to Paul. You know, he actually stood up and waved the record in front of his face and said, "Look, did you know that Johnny Wakelin had done this great tribute for you?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, I didn't know that, but I would like to hear it right now." And so I arranged to get this equipment up on the stage to play it. You know, some pretty cheap stuff, really, but it managed to play it. And
so what did he say?
So much that the next day he was telling the press about this guy from Brighton, the white guy, is saying that he's the black Superman, and we want you to, you know, want you to promote it for me, so which he did. And in Zaire, obviously.
Yeah, well, of course, I was going to ask you about In Zaire later, but what was flashing through my mind is last year, is it last year or the year before? I can't remember now. Yeah, it was last year. We had Henry Cooper on the show, you know, and of course I should have played that to him, shouldn't I? But what did you feel when you met the guy? Because we saw so much of his personality through the TV and everything. Did he have this sort of aura about him?
He was a most incredible person. All that mouthiness that he showed in his early career was just a front. He's a really pleasant guy and very easy to talk to, and he meant well. You know, he wanted to you know, the world to be at peace, and
yes.
He didn't like the Vietnam War, and he genuinely didn't like that. It wasn't just a, you know, the fact that he got banned from boxing for 3 or 4 years because he wouldn't go to Vietnam. It wasn't just a ruse to get out of going. He truly didn't believe in it, you know. And so he was a very genuine man.
Yeah, and
very nice guy.
It does take a lot of courage to stand for things that you believe in.
Yeah.
And of course, especially from his eminent position, that must have been exceptionally difficult for him.
Yeah.
Now, Johnny, I've got to ask you about the Portuguese lottery show. Not many people can say they've done that one. Tell us how you came to get that.
Well, you see, I get, even now I get these offers to go over to, you know, various European countries to do 70s TV shows, because they love all that nostalgia.
Yeah.
Especially the Germans. And all kinds of things like that. And I was asked to do this, to go and do In Zaire on the Portuguese lottery draw one night. One of their, you know, on a Monday night, I think it was. I think they do it there. And so I went all the way up there and stayed for 2 days and just went on stage with no rehearsal, just straight on. They just played the song and I walked straight on and did this thing with no, absolutely no rehearsal at all. And it went well. It was great. I just sang the song and then had a short interview with the guy and pressed the button and that was it, you know.
Absolutely wonderful.
A bit like they do here, you know, that sort of thing.
Have you ever been to Spain, by the way?
I've been to Spain. I was in Madrid for a week back in the old, in the mid-70s when I was, I'd had a record out called, believe it or not, Dr. Frankenstein's Disco Party, which I didn't write. I was asked to do it as a single, as a special favour to somebody, and it was, as far as I know, it was quite a success in Italy, Spain, Portugal, that kind of area, but not really anywhere else. But anyway, I was there for that. They did a big open air TV show with lots of other well known pop stars at the time, and so I was one of those. We went and did that, and I stayed there for a week for that because there was quite a few kind of TV interviews and radio interviews as well they wanted to do. So
yeah, and
so I've never actually been down on the coast there where you are. I dare say you're on the coast, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. We are. We're right down near Benidorm.
I've never been there. People keep saying to me, why don't you go down there, you could probably get a lot of work, you know. Maybe I could, but I don't know.
Well, it's either that or In Zaire, isn't it? let me give you a voice that you might remember. You've appeared on this person's show, if I've got it right. Here we go.
Hello, my little possums. It's time for Vince Tracy's weekly draw. It's a lovely meal for two.
Can you remember that voice?
No, I can't. Not really.
Maybe the first part. I'll try it again, the first part.
Hello, my little possums. It's...
Oh, that's... Oh, yeah. Barry Humphries,
yes. Yes, it is, actually. It's my friend Paul Melba, who's the impressionist, doing Barry Humphries. But tell us about your experience with Barry Humphries.
Yeah, well, I did a lovely tour in Australia in 75. I was there for about 3 months. And one of the... I did several TVs while I was there, one of them being where Barry Humphries was involved. It wasn't his show, but he was at the back as though he was one of the audience, but he was doing his Les Patterson thing, you know.
Yes.
Not so much the Dame Edna.
Yeah.
But he was dressed as Les Patterson, and what he was doing was that those that were being interviewed would be doing the normal thing, and then all of a sudden he would start heckling, you know, from the back as Les Patterson, then come down and join the interview. And that was hilarious, you know. He's a great guy as well.
Yes.
But I did a lot of TV. I did Paul Hogan's show over there.
Yes, yeah.
And Celebrity Squares and some...
So the songs have certainly taken you far and wide, haven't they?
Yes.
I've
done a lot of things. Loved it over there. Did some of the big clubs, the kind of Las Vegas-type clubs in Sydney and so on. The RSL clubs, as they call them, I think, where I had to take all the dots for the orchestra, because they all got their own orchestras. That was great. But I also did a tour over there at the same time of smaller venues with a band that they provided, the Aussies provided.
Yeah.
And they were a bit nervous to start with because they hadn't really done a lot of live stuff, but they were good players, you know.
Yeah.
It worked out really well.
Now, according to what I've been reading on the internet, you're always looking for a great tune, and you're always available for collaboration. Is this the way that you see your future now?
Yes, I think so. I've always written my own songs entirely, but just recently I've started to collaborate with people, and that worked really well. I did a really nice album in France this time last year. Some guy who is British, but he lives there in a little remote farmhouse. He's got a studio, and he's a brilliant musician. And he invited me up to write some lyrics for a couple of songs of an album he was doing. And I went out there and ended up doing the lyrics for all the songs. I think it was 15 altogether, and wrote all the lyrics and did all the vocals. Unfortunately, since then the poor guy's got leukemia, and he's not a well man at all. And, we haven't been able to push this album that much because he was also going to do an animated video for it, which he hasn't been able to do. And it's available on iTunes, you know, for download and so on. But we haven't really. It's kind of stood still. We haven't really progressed with it so far.
Now, obviously, I went quickly to In Zaire and The Black Superman. If there was another song that you'd have preferred me to be playing, what would be the song out of the songs that you've released that you would feel happiest for people to hear?
That's a hard one because I've written some really meaningful songs that are nothing to do with Afro or reggae or anything. Which I really love, and they're songs that I still do at gigs. So it's difficult. I mean, I've written some really good soulful ballads, but in this album that I've just mentioned, there's a track on there that really should be played. Hopefully, it's going back to the Afro thing, really, but because it's called In Africa. but it's a very important song because it's all about the African problem with the drought and the kids, and you know there's not enough corn and so on over there. You know, the usual thing. But it's very poignant. You know, it was really worth doing, and I would like that to get some airplay at some point and try and, you know, get it off the ground, because I would dedicate the recording royalties to whatever charity was involved with that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, you've got my email, and if you'd like to send me an MP3 file of that particular song, is it the one that's been around since about 2005?
No, this is we only did it last year. I know what you're saying. You're talking about another version of In Zaire.
I'm looking down your discography, and it's on the Wikipedia site.
This is quite new, really. I mean, it's about 11 months old, I suppose. It's not to be confused with In Zaire. It's called In Africa because it's all about the price. Nothing to do with Muhammad Ali or boxing or anything. It's to do with the problems of feeding the kids and that in Africa. It's called In Africa.
Okay, well, look, if you can send me an MP3 file, I'll certainly start having a look at that, and then maybe we can introduce our listeners to that.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, what I normally do now is I'll make a podcast tribute page to yourself, which I'll link from my site up to your sites, and obviously let's hope that we can get people to come and visit and see what you've done, and obviously take it forward from there.
Thanks very much.
Johnny, it's been really nice talking with you.
I appreciate it, Vince.
And thank you very much indeed for your time this afternoon.
Thanks a lot.
All the best to you. Thank you, John. Bye-bye. That's Johnny Wakelin, and In Zaire is what I'm playing now. This got to number 4 in 1976. Your time is 2:34.
A battle there
in Zaire,
100,000 people there
in Zaire.
In Zaire.